Position number 21116, Reel 8.
Not on Reel 8.
Yeah, probably a strength of approximately 20 to 30 senior ranks. It was very difficult to tell because you were never all together, you were split up. We had a colonel in charge, and we lived in a house on the road just outside Ipswich when we was in UK. We was quite a good bunch of people. It was all British except for the French operators and interpreters that was with us. They were quite a good bunch.
And what was the full title of the unit?
It was 20 Liaison, SAS.
Did you have a rank at the time?
I was Staff Sergeant. I was Staff Sergeant before I went to Africa. I was Sergeant in 1941, Staff Sergeant in 43, early 43. I finished the war as a Staff Sergeant. After this operation, we pulled back to UK, and that was the end of the actual hostilities. That was the end of the hostilities as far as we was concerned. The armistice came, and the British SAS were sent to Norway. They took on the job of rounding up the Germans in Norway, disarming them and getting them back to Germany. The 20 Liaison, we had no job at that time, but the French were eager to get back to France. De Gaulle, the war finished, De Gaulle was feeling very, very, very good, but the communists were pretty strong and in France, and I think he was afraid that communists would take over. So he wanted his parachutists back as soon as he possibly could. It was decided that they would go back together, both battalions, back to the French army, and they would go down to Châteaubourg Aerodrome, Nantes, just outside Nantes, which is now, by the way, it's the international airport for Nantes. It was Châteaubourg Aerodrome then. It was a French airfield, but it was also used as a staging, a refueling spot for the RAF transports coming from the Middle East, coming from the Far East. They used to fly across there on a thing called Python. Python was an exercise getting people home into the war. And they used to refuel at Châteaubourg to fly on the rest of the way to UK. Now, when they went to the back to the French army, I had the job of going, taking down myself and three SAS lads, British. We had the job of liaison with the British units in the area.
Which area?
Pardon?
Which area?
In the Nantes area, around Châteaubourg. Because when we motored back to Southampton we took a ferry across to Cherbourg. From Cherbourg we motored down to Nantes, onto Châteaubourg Aerodrome, where we set up shop. The French had nothing. The French army was completely disorganized. They had no ammunition, they had no stores, they had no equipment. So we had two British trained battalions of parachutists, and then we were joined by another battalion that had been trained by the Americans. They wore American uniforms and everything, and they had landed in the south of France as part of the invasion from of the south. They formed formed a brigade, a parachute brigade. Two of them British uniforms, one of them American uniform. They had job getting petrol. I had to swan around I had a piece of paper signed by the general asking that any British commander in that area to do the best they could to help the French until such times as their own supply line came into being. I had great success getting petrol because the RAF, this little RAF unit on Chateaubourgan Aerodrome, that was a staging post for the planes coming across, they had a train loads of petrol. Most of it was aircraft petrol. But we found that we could mix it, some of it, and we could still run the jeeps with it. And so I managed to get hundreds and hundreds of gallons from the RAF of fuel. So I kept them going in fuel. We also managed to get ammunition from various units, near British units, because they was all British units in France were winding down anyway, so they was quite happy to sign stuff over to us. As long as they got a signature for it, they was willing to give us ammunition, whatever. That gradually went to a halt, and I got a signal that I had to move from Nantes to Paris with my blokes and my jeeps. I was to go to a place called Hotel de Palais Royal, Place de Palais Royal in Paris. It's very close to the Louvre, and they set up a unit there. It was the bureau of a unit that was set up to round up people responsible for atrocities to various units. Part of the war crimes, really. I arrived there with my jeeps, and they just formed a small section, SAS section. The trouble is that most of the top men that caused atrocities were French. They took them into the they wore SS uniform. They were French, they put them in power, more or less. And they was the caused more trouble than anybody. Immediately the war finished, they took the uniform off and they just disappeared into the countryside. We had photographs, and we sent photographs all over France to the market, all the market units, asking them to, if they find these people, to let us know. And it started to work. The Hotel de Palais Royal was the bureau. We had a canteen there, an all ranks mess there. But we was living in a flat in Saint Cloud. Me and my chaps were living in Saint Cloud, and we used to travel daily. I was on ration money, so we ate French. We had money to buy stuff with. The only British troops in Paris at that time was the people at the embassy. There was MPs at the embassy. They had a post office. Paris was the leaf centre for all American troops. Brussels was the leaf centre for all the British troops. So in Paris at that time there was 50,000 to 20,000 troops coming in every day from surrounding camps, and they just drunk themselves, wine, women, and song. They were working really rough. We had some jobs that came in. People we identified. We were then given a telephone message. We would go down, an SAS officer and myself, or one of my people, would go down in a jeep, find these people, the people that identify them, then we'd try to check that they were definitely right, and then we would lift them, we would arrest them. When we arrested them at first, we used to hand them over to the French police, which was a mistake to start with, because the French police were very corrupt anyway. and they we handed them over to the French police, and they were away again, bribed their way out. So it was decided that although it was illegal, what we should do with them, they'd take them over the frontier into Germany, hand them over to the military police in Germany, which we did from that time onwards. It was quite irregular. We got a staff car to do this, and we used to bound and gag the person, keep up on the floor in the back of the staff car. They had no heaters in staff cars in the war, so they had rugs, which put over the, and we could cover them over with a rug, and cross the frontier into Germany, hand him over then to the British MPs, and we was very. We had one chappie that he had been responsible, indirectly responsible for the death of quite a few SAS people that had been shot out of hand, and he was one of them we sent back, and he actually got hung after the war camps, after the trials. You wasn't on the job all the time, because you might go 2 weeks and not to hear a murmur. You might then get suddenly about three places that said there's somebody there. You go down, and when we got down there, it wasn't people. So it wasn't all success, but we had some success. We weren't the only people operating. The RAF was operating from there too on the same thing, because they had quite a few of their airmen that downed in France, coming through, that were picked up by the police and mistreat. So there was the RAF had some people there, the French had some people there, the Americans had some people there. So it was a cosmopolitan bunch. This was getting on the rest of the time. It was pretty, we had a pretty fair time. We had nothing much to do if we wasn't going out, so we had time to look at Paris. We had money, because we was on ration money. It was a pretty good time. Next thing we got another, anyway, this was winding down, we got a signal saying that I had to move with my people and my jeeps up to Brussels. The Belgium SAS was coming back to the Belgium army, and to Roeren Barracks, just outside Brussels. I motored up there, and I had the similar job as I had with the French, getting British units to give petrol and things until the Belgium army got themselves established. And the same unit, same barracks, is still occupied by the paracommandos now, Tavouan Barracks. While I was with the Belgians at Tavouan, they decided to give a demonstration jump to the Belgian people of Belgium on the field of Waterloo. And I jumped with them. That was last time I jumped out of a plane. And we had Halifax, RAF Halifaxes, and we took off, and we flew, and we dropped quite a heck of a number, I should say, probably 100, in the hundreds, on the field at Waterloo. And it was on the 21st of October, my birthday. And we flew in from the south, and there is a monument Waterloo. It's a huge mound with a whacking great lion on the top, and behind it is a circular museum, a circular buildings. And 100,000 people had travelled out from Brussels by tram. They had trams going right away down to the place. So there were people, there was everywhere, and I managed to take photographs coming down. I'd been wanting to try it, but of course you can only take photographs in daylight, and we never dropped in daylight, we only dropped in the dark. But this day we dropped in daylight, and I took shots coming out of the plane. I took shots of the Waterloo from above, from level with the lion, and looking up to the lion. I have I've got some copies there, and it was quite a successful job. I shall always remember it as my last jump, and I know it's my birthday. We then was told that we was going back to UK, and by this time the SA had disbanded, so we was the last people to come back to UK. They started disbanding in October. We didn't get back until December, and when I arrived back in the UK, I had no home. They disbanded and they didn't send me. I reported to the state at the station, to the transit people at the station, and they asked me where I was, all about it, and they said, well, we don't know, there's no such thing now, they've disbanded. So they sent me down to Winterbourne Gunner, to the Airborne Forces area. So I went back to the Airborne Forces at Winterbourne Gunner. From there I was sent to a workshop in London, and from there I was demobilised for the first time. I was demobilised twice. I rejoined after 7 years and did another 22 years. That's another tale.
When you rejoined, were you in any operations after that?
No, actually, when I rejoined, I went back into Remy, and SAS had disbanded. SAS didn't reform again until 1948 as a TA unit. Artist Rifles, actually. And the actual 22nd SAS didn't come into being until well into the 50s. And now, of course, there is the 21st, 22nd and 23rd, the 1st and the 20, two are territorials, and the 22nd is the regular unit.
Of all your operational experience in the war, which was the worst?
the worst, I should think, was the Sicily operation. You didn't know where he was. You were in a glider. It was pitching up and down. You didn't know whether he was going north, south, or east, because the only people that could see were the pilots. You went in with a bang. We got the injuries. We had to pull back, and it's like all warfare. Most of the time, you don't know what's happening. You just respond to the situation. Nothing works according to plan, especially airborne forces operations, because they rely on people being in the right spot at the right time, and it's very difficult to do that.
And which of your operational experiences was the easiest?
There again, possibly the Sicily one, because that only lasted, it only lasted 24 hours, actual fighting. By that time, we'd been relieved. So although we were there for 3 days, we was only fighting for a matter of 24 hours. D-Day was probably the... It could have been the most dangerous one. Believe me, I was scared. The person who says he's not scared is telling you lies. Either that or he's a raving lunatic. All the people I knew were scared. But when the adrenaline comes in, discipline, and you stop being scared. But you're scared. From the minute I put a parachute on my back, I got butterflies in the stomach. And I had the butterflies until I came out of the plane. Once I came out of the plane, I felt good. But she's scared.
Go on. You can.
But looking back on it, you know, I was very lucky, really. People say dangerous special forces. But in actual time, I was in action all the time during the war. That's including the France 1939, Dunkirk, Sicily, Italy, back into Europe. I don't think I was in action 3 months. No, nowhere near 3 months, solidly. You had people, infantry battalions, went in on D-Day, and they were in action for 3 months consecutively. So, although you might get more casualties in the first place, you don't see as much action, the continual action, as the infantryman does. And they are the people who do the work. The other people get the kudos, but the infantry do all the hard work.
How do you feel now about having served with SAS in the Second World War?
I was very proud to have served with them. I'm still a member of the association. We meet at regular intervals. I was very proud to have been to be able to serve with them.
And the Rough Riders?
I was happy with all my units during the war. The Border Regiment, a first class regiment. They was all regular soldiers. I was the only non-regular soldier at that time, and they turned me into a soldier. I owe everything to them, as far as that's concerned. Because until I met them, I wasn't a soldier. I was simply a mechanic in uniform.
Did you have any after effects of having served in the Second World War?
My wife said I was difficult to live with for 3 years.
Do you think you were?
Well, if she thinks I was, I must have been. Yes, I was very touchy. And so was most people. I think the majority of people were the same way. It took a while to settle back into normality.
What do you mean by touchy?
Liable to lose your temper. I couldn't suffer fools that easily.
What is all this down to then?
I suppose it's 6 years of living under those conditions. It becomes a way of life.
Did you have any physical after effect?
No, none at all.
So you were never wounded?
No.
Any nightmares?
No. The nearest I got to being wounded was by the RAF, actually. They dropped a bomb very close to us, and the nose cone flew through the air. And I was actually stopped alongside my Jeep, and this bomb landed probably about 150 yards down the road. And I saw this thing come through the air, and I suddenly realised it come in my direction, and I dropped to the floor, and it hit the wall behind me, and dropped down, and it was the nose cone, I should say the fused part of a bomb. It was brass, it was hot, because I made a mistake of picking it up, and it was British, it had all the British markings on, and it had just flown through the air and hit the wall behind me. And that's the nearest I was to be wounded.
Where was that?
That was in Holland.
In 45. Well,
at the time I was coming back from when we'd been up there to Arnhem. I was coming back down there, and the bombs were dropped. It was strange because the bombers were coming over. Hundreds of them coming over. It was a 1,000 bomber raid, and suddenly a load of bombs came out of one, and it was British planes, and the bomb was British, so it must have had something go wrong, because it bombed our own people. I don't know if it hit any, but but it certainly scared me.
What were your feelings towards the enemy in the Second World War?
I found the Germans good soldiers. They fought hard, but they fought fairly. I didn't have any case to grumble about the behaviour of German soldiers. We always seemed to bump into the same sort of people. We always finished up with paras, the German parachutists, or the Waffen-SS. The Waffen-SS were good soldiers. People mixed them up with the SS secret police, and of course everybody that was in the SS looked down on, but it's the people that we fought against, the Waffen-SS, they were quite damn good soldiers. I don't think they liked the SAS itself, Gestapo people at all. They was the same way, they thought about it the same way as we did.
And the Italian enemy?
The Italians, well, I didn't see many Italians. It was, at the time, I think they'd lost the will to win. I think they was ready for finishing anyway. One of the funny things that happened was while I was stationed in Paris, I was off duty, I was in a cafe, I was having rolls and a coffee, and the door of the cafe burst open, and in came probably a dozen snowdrops, the snowdrop being the American military police. They've got white helmets, white gaiters, white belts, and white batons, white truncheons, so about 2'6", 3 foot long. The captain in charge of them looked like Jimmy Cagney, and he walked over and he shouts, "Everybody out." I ignored him because I was British and he was American. They all went out. Suddenly he bashed the top of the table with his baton and said, "That means you." And so I said to him, "You know, I'm not one of your lot." He says, "Out." So I don't argue with Jimmy Cagney if he's got a 3 foot baton. Went outside, and outside was a huge articulated van, and it said, "United States number one mobile prophylactic station." They had steps going up at the back and steps coming out at the front, down at the front, and a queue was formed. And as you walked in into the place, you had to drop your slacks, and they had a huge grease gun, and they stuck this grease gun into the end of the penis, and they give you a shot, and it was quite funny, really. They give you a little onion bag with strings on, so you cover your private parts so that you didn't soil your underpants, and they give you a stamped card, and you marched out at the front end. It was quite funny because there was some saying, "I enjoyed that, boy. I think I'll join the queue again." But it was rather funny. I carried that cart for quite some time, and then eventually, of course, someone stole it off me.
What did the card say?
It said this man had been cleared by number one mobile prophylactic station, and the date.